people talking right about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way to live. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. And I'm going to have a really special insertion today in the program. I'm going to be having a short talk given by Dr. James Sears, with an introduction by myself, that summarizes some of what happened at the sentencing hearing this past Friday, April 26th, in Toronto. Dr. James Sears and his publisher, Leroy St. Germain, were convicted under Canada's notorious so-called hate law for, in their satirical newspaper, Your World News, having willfully promoted hatred against two privileged minorities, women and Jews. Well, Friday was supposed to be the sentencing hearing. It didn't go quite as well as the haters of free speech might have hoped, and we live, in a sense, to fight another day. So I'll be introducing Dr. James Sears and talking a bit about this. But in the meantime, let me see. I was having to see a friend up in North Toronto today and had to pay the extortionate parking fees. You see, where there's parking on streets in many parts of Toronto, they have one of these green contraptions, and you go up to it and you find out what the rate is and how many hours you're allowed to park in that particular given place. And where I was with 3 hours would be 3 hours. So you buy parking up to that amount. So if you want to, where I was, if you want to stay for an hour, it's $4. For 2 hours, it'd be 28, and so on. So I said, well, okay, I'll pay for an hour and a half, so that would be $6. So I started to plunk some coins in. You see, you can either pay by coin or by credit card. So I started to plunk some coins in, and the coins promptly got returned to me. So I put the coin in again, and it got returned, in again, got returned. So finally, in despair, I had to play with credit card. So I thought, you know, this not only is this extortion, and of course you see these small cars with the by law enforcement officers, or we used to call them the green grabbers, coming along, and of course they want to lurk around. If you've gone 1 minute over, they want to slap a big fine on you, a big ticket on your car. So I despise these people. I think they're parasites. So anyway, I thought, okay. When I was finished my gathering on my way back to the traffic gridlock, I decided to call the parking authority. So I finally get somebody, and he doesn't understand very clearly. He said, well, you can't park. It's after 4. I said, I know it's after 4. I'm talking about earlier this afternoon. Okay, we finally get back clear. And I said, that this particular station doesn't work. I forget the exact number, it slips my mind, but it was 7604, I think. Oh, well, they said, it doesn't matter. If it doesn't work, you have to use a credit card. And you'll be ticketed anyway, even if it doesn't work. I said, well, that seems really fair. You know, you can run an efficient system, but the customer's always wrong. I mean, I wasn't putting up with any crap from him. And I really thought, doesn't that say something? Even if the machine doesn't work, and you can conveniently pay their extortionate parking fee, you'll still get ticketed. this country is absolutely ripe for a citizens' revolt. Yeah, to sweep these little petty tyrants out of their comfy positions. Okay, well, let's see what other annoyances and nuisances I faced. Oh, yeah. I was at the Tim Hortons. Now, that's a very popular. In fact, I'd say it's an iconic Canadian coffee and donut shop, named after the late, great, for a long time, Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman Tim Hortons, in the end of his career with the Buffalo Sabres. Ended all too young. He died at 37, I believe, in a bad car accident. Anyway, I was at Tim Hortons, and there was a sign that they're always saying sorry, but they don't really mean it. It said, sorry for the inconvenience, but because of widespread counterfeiting, we no longer accept $100 bills. I thought, that's outrageous. Now, I might understand a very small, let's say, hot dog vendor. Perhaps he doesn't do a lot of business in a day. He might have trouble changing a $100 bill. But come on, this is it was actually a Tim Hortons coffee shop in a service station. So there's plenty of money around. So they won't change a $100 bill. Okay, I noted that, took a picture of it. I'm going to complain to their head office. I'm also a shareholder, so I have two reasons to complain. I not only use the product, I'm a part owner of a tiny owner of the company. Then I was dropping off a good friend at the airport today. So I come to the friend, through the getting the boarding pass, and there's a little bit of time to kill before the friend had to go on through security and onto the gate. So we went to a Starbucks. Now, normally, I don't patronize Starbucks. I don't like their coffee. I do not like the fact they're a Zionist, 110% Israel company. I do not like the fact they've vowed to hire 10,000 refugees around the world. What about white Canadians and Americans who need a job? And what else? Oh, yeah, they're very much for the LGBTQ, sexually weird agenda. But anyway, there was no other choice. So fair enough, I go up to buy their overpriced tea for this person and a coffee for me. And there's a sign there. Well, it's even worse than Tim Hortons. It says, sorry for the inconvenience, but we cannot accept $100 bills or $50 bills. I thought, would you accept a you're overpriced $6 and some odd cents in pennies. Well, actually, they might do that because they withdraw on the penny. The smallest present coin is the nickel, the 5 cent piece. Well, I registered my complaint. Not that it does any good, because these people are all so low down the totem pole, they just look at you. Half of them don't even speak much English. I don't know what to do. This is too much for me. So I was in a bank later on in the day. I'm always in banks for one reason or another. So having transacted my business, I asked the teller. I said, in Canada, a business is obligated to accept Canadian notes or, you know, currency, right? She said, yes. I said, a business would not be allowed to say, we won't accept $50 bills or $100 bills. She said, no, they wouldn't. I thought, no, that's pretty much what I thought. It's legal tender in Canada. If somebody proffers it, they've got to accept it, right? I was then in another bank. Yes, it's not that I have that much money, but anyway, long story short, after I'd done my deposit, I had the same conversation with that teller. And she too confirmed, yes, she said. If it's a business, they must accept legal Canadian tender or currency. A $50 or $100 bill is legal Canadian currency. And she said, what you should have done is said, well, listen, I don't have a credit card. I'm offering you $50. If you can't accept it, I've got the coffee for free. And maybe that's what ought to be done. You know, we put up with just too much crap. In fact, I said to both tellers, you know you're in Canada because the customer is always... You were about to say right? No, wrong. The customer is always wrong. Oh, okay, they say, they're sorry. Well, sorry doesn't cut it. If I, for instance, and this has occurred on a number of occasions with me, I've just taken somebody out of the bank and I take it out and, you know, say, I take out $100, I take out two $50 bills. If that's all I have in my pocket... Yes, I do have a credit card, but why should I have to use it? I have legal Canadian currency, legal Canadian banknotes. Why should they be allowed to say, oh, sorry, this is because of a counterfeiting? Well, I'll tell you why. I went to my Italian market, and these are good people, family-owned business, salt-of-the-earth people, excellent vegetable and fruit produce and a great meat counter. Maybe a little pricier than some of the cut-rate supermarkets, but you get great quality, you get even better service. So I asked one of the checkout girls there, same question. And she said, oh yes, well, you know, we accept you know, 50s or 100s or, you know. And I said, well, you've got ways of, you know, telling. She says, oh yeah. Just look at, and if you've seen a $50 or $100 Canadian banknote recently, there's a sort of almost like a window that you can see through. There's a kind of odd images within the window. It's a very, very complicated thing. I would imagine it'd be very difficult to forge. But anyway, they have machines. There's like almost like a little, like the type of machine that they can process a credit card on. Well, it's a little scanner, and they can tell. And the fact is, you see, business is lazy and cheap. No, I shouldn't say not business, but some businesses. Then rather than give the clerk or the checkout girl the person selling you the coffee a little bit of training, which might take 10 or 15 minutes, far better just to inconvenience the customers. And this goes back to a lack of training in many cases. They just don't want to invest in their employees. So far better just to tell you, sorry, bummer, what can we do? Well, I'm not prepared to accept it. I think a lot of people are in the same boat. We're not prepared to accept it. Anyway, I mentioned I'd be playing the excellent talk Dr. James Sears gave on Saturday. And without further ado, here's my introduction and Dr. Sears' talk. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. And when we can get this thing moving, we'll play Dr. Sears.
I hope. We're going to start the meeting, actually, before I introduce our friends on the stage, with a chance for Dr. Sears to have a few words with you. So many of you came out to court and supported him, and that's very much appreciated. I don't think it was lost on the reporters, the fact that the court was swamped with supporters of free speech. They, of course, made nasty comments that every time...
And there's a brief hiatus here.
The Crown read a critical comment about women or Jews, or people vigorously nodded. I don't think that's quite accurate, but they could tell that that there are a lot of scores of free speech there, and that's really good. And in the general mix of things, and the karma and whatever else, well, that all counts. And so your presence was really appreciated. Yesterday was a typical day in a Canadian court. And nothing quite ever gets resolved. It was supposed to be the sentencing. Dr. Sears and Leroy St. Germain, the publisher, were convicted back in January. This, of course, will have to be appealed. They were convicted because of satire, and that's hardly ever acknowledged in the mainstream press. The Railroad News is satirical, uses humor, and they were convicted of willfully promoting hatred against privileged minorities, in this case, women and Jews. Yesterday was supposed to be the sentencing. Well, there are lots of complexities. You see, Leroy St. Germain is Aboriginal. I mean, he's actually a Métis. Now, that means he's a special person. Well, we all think he's special. But he's special in a special way that he has to have a special assessment as to what his native heritage, how his native heritage might have been impacted on his life and why that might reduce his sentence. This is all very complicated stuff. Well, it hasn't occurred yet. So they couldn't deal with Leroy yesterday. That's postponed until, I think, July. Well, now, of course, the number one target, Dr. Sears. And what the Crown did was they brought in six victim impact statements. Now, you might say, and I would say too, well, where's the victim? These were words. Nobody got beaten up or raped or punched out or their place burned down. Where's the victim? Well, anyway, four different Jewish groups decided that they were victims. And they wanted to say that, well, some person who is the son of a Holocaust denier, Holocaust survivor. They got your word news on the driveway. Well, I mean, it just made them feel so unsafe. The victim impact statements were filled with this appalling nonsense. And then there were two victim impact statements from rape crisis centers. Now, I won't go into all of that, but several of the people who signed these statements were anonymous. They were so afraid that they were anonymous. It's hard to take this seriously. Well, I guess we have to take it seriously. So James' lawyer did challenge that. He said, we can't really accept victim impact statements from people who have no names. I mean. Anyway, that took a long time, and the judge, who'd only just been presented with these yesterday, said, well, I have to take them away and study them. And so the long and the short is the sentencing is postponed until May the 31st. The prosecution was very hardcore. They want a year in jail. That's the maximum sentence of 6 months in jail for each of the two counts to be served concurrently. So 6 months, 6 months equals a year. Sorry? Consecutively. So they want the maximum possible, plus restrictive conditions for parole for 3 years, 3 years, which Dr. Sears will address. And then his lawyer gave a short, but I thought fairly effective rebuttal. Essentially, what the defense wants is basically a conditional discharge. In other words, goodbye. And what James is trying to do is convince the judge that although he technically found an offense, And that will have to be appealed. But the ballpark we're playing in here is like, okay, you have to acknowledge there was an offense. Well, what do you do with it? Well, his argument is that it is so trivial, and the good done by your Lord News is so overwhelming that he deserves a total conditional discharge. So I'd like to introduce the man whose incredible courage has captured the media. He just absolutely dominated the media last night. He put on an absolute tremendous performance, and there are things that went on in the court that blew my mind, and he'll tell us about that. Please welcome James Searson.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, where do I start? You had mentioned the media, dominating the media. After I was found guilty, my partner and I were found guilty, my lawyer did what every lawyer does and says, don't talk to the media. He's not a Doug Christie. My lawyer is technically a very good lawyer, but he doesn't like speaking to the media. He says, don't talk to the media. That's my advice to you. So I went to talk to the media, and I said, I compared myself to Jesus that was being crucified, and said that this was a dark day for Christianity across Canada. The media took that soundbite, because I knew it was just like Donald Trump will say something like stable genius, and they'll publish it, but then all people remember is he's a stable genius a week later. They don't remember that the media mocked him for saying it, right? So I said, I'm going to be a little narcissistic, compare myself to Jesus. So they published it. Then all the emails started coming in, and people started, narrative was, they're battling Christianity, right? This time around, I was prepared, okay? My narrative, and you'll see in the newspaper, okay, now, we're going to get into how I came up with safety valve. Now the media jumped on safety valve. They're saying, he's trying to get out of jail by calling your Word News a safety valve, and they're mocking it, but now safety valve is in the news. And let me explain what I meant by that. I have the right to do something called an allocution. Now, the United States has a lot of case law regarding allocution. That's the right of a defendant to speak to sentencing. That means before they sentence the defendant, which he's no longer a defendant, he's a convict, before he's sentenced, he has the right to speak. Now, it comes out of the old common law days. In the old days, you couldn't really present evidence. They would allow you to allocute to the evidence. Nowadays, you're allowed to present evidence in court. So people argue, well, does allocution still have a place? But it does. In the United States, they've made a lot of arguments that allocution does have a place, because a lot of people, there's plea bargains, a lot of things happen where they don't take the stand. So the allocution is important. Also, the allocution, they've argued, humanizes people. In Canada, there's no case law. So I was prevented from allocuting fully. And because of that, I'm going to try to set some case law, because there should be some. I think my common law rights were violated. So I had a 62-page allocution, probably would have taken me 2 to 3 hours to read out. He said, no, you got a few minutes. And then he intimidated me at the beginning, or tried to intimidate me, he didn't intimidate me, by saying, I will not tolerate you saying any hate speech in here. Now that was wrong. That alone was an attempt to put me under duress by making that statement. He should, only if I start saying hate speech, whatever that is, should he say, hold on, I'm warning you, by saying that the Irish are all drunks, you are violated, but you know what I'm saying, right? My wife is in a whole quit, so she's, I'm allowed to say that. Now, so he did that initially, so he tried to intimidate me initially. Then he said, I have a few minutes, because they have another case. We had all day, but he didn't realize they had scheduled another case. Is that my fault? Right? So this occurred. And Then they said, take a short recess, whatever, 5 minutes to talk to my lawyer. My lawyer, of course, doesn't even agree with what I was going to allocute or anything. He didn't want anything to do with it. That's a bit of a problem, right? So, you know, he's not a Doug Christie or someone like that. So, but he's technically a very good lawyer. He knows the technical aspects of it. In any event, I had to regroup. I had about 20 minutes, and I started spitting out whatever I could in 20 minutes, or even less than that. I don't even know. I literally probably got to 3 or 4 pages of my allocution. And I acknowledged that Grace had come out all the way from Japan to be there, that she was a journalist, an artist, what have you. Last night, Anti-Racist Collective, whatever they're called, Canada, Anti-Racist Canada blog posted that a woman from Japan who funds our paper, and they just made up stuff. They said she's the funder of our paper came out from Japan, and she's one of the Nazis. It's like, you just can't make this stuff up. Then I decided, okay, I couldn't do my whole allocution. I'm going to do the shocking part first. I brought out a blind gentleman with a cane who came out. I said, this is Jonathan. I'd written an article about Jonathan in Your Ward News, a medical malpractice article titled License to Kill with Knife and Pill, about how doctors butcher people. And Jonathan went in for elective, I think he had some cataracts and elective surgery. The doctor blinded him fully. He did both eyes, or was it one eye? No, he did one eye and blinded that, and the other eye was already gone. So Jonathan had to use a cane. He complained to the College of Physicians and Surgeons, who said it was just a complication. But when you go onto the internet and you look up ratings of the doctor, he has a tendency to blind people. But of course, they don't look at that. So in other words, if one doctor blinds 1% of his patients, another doctor blinds 99%, as long as it's an acceptable complication, they don't touch the doctor at 99%. So that was what the article was about. But Jonathan, no one would give him a voice, right? I gave him a voice in my article, and I told the judge, Jonathan had planned on pouring acid into the doctor's face to blind him as payback for what he did to him. Of course, the courtroom hushed, right? Like not even, you couldn't even hear breathing in the courtroom. Then I had Jonathan sit down. And then I read out other examples of people who were going to firebomb synagogues because they had, in Palestine, relatives mutilated. And they got the newspaper in the mail, saw that I gave him a voice, decided not to do it. I gave a whole list of people. There were a guy who was going to shoot up Children's Aid Society workers because of their child custody, or child protective services, as you call them in the States, because he was frustrated. And then he got the article that I had written on what Children's Aid does. And he decided not to do that. And I went through list after list, I went through all these examples, and I told the judge that we are a release valve for people, that it is actually safer, even if the judge thinks we're spewing hate speech, it's safer he let us do it than shut us down so these guys don't have a release valve. Warren Kinsella, the top Marxist in Canada, was in the courtroom, and I think, Paul, you said that he put his face in his hands. Like, he was like this, like almost like a guy watching his house on fire.
Yeah.
He was literally, I didn't see him because I was there, and I was raising my voice to the judge. Mm-hmm. Like, not yelling at him, but I was forceful because I was just frustrated that it revoked my right to allocute, right? So, And Kinsella knew, this was brilliant. Because he's like, but the best part, in my opinion, was at the beginning. I said, I would have taken the stand to tell you what I'm about to tell you, but I'm not a rat. Because if I take the stand, there's not a Fifth Amendment like the states. If I take the stand, I have to answer all questions, which means if they ask me who donates to the paper, who writes under pen names in the paper, I got to give the names. Boys from Brazil. I got to give the names. And the judge was nodding his head when I, the judge understood. I said, I could have done that, and I know there's a good chance I would have been acquitted because I would have said this stuff right on the witness stand. But I am not a rat, and I'd rather go to jail than rat people out. And that's the other thing, okay? And that's the message that has to be disseminated, number one. That if I go to jail, it's not because I know if I'm on the stand, I know how to talk. I would have explained to the judge what I'm doing. He would have said probably, you know what? I believe it's hate speech, but you need motive, like this mens rea is required. Actus reus, the offense, you could say is there, but you need the mens rea, which means you need to have the intent has to be there. And I could have dispelled the intent very easily, but I'm not a rat. So I was trying to use my right to allocution to at least mitigate the sentence a little bit, right? To say, okay, well, he found me guilty, but give me an absolute discharge. Because, you know, if I took the stand and said this, you wouldn't have found me guilty. But, of course, I wasn't permitted to do it fully. I did the best I could with what I had. And I also read out to the judge some quotes out of the Cohen Commission. And for those of you who are not aware, in the 60s, in 1965, a law professor by the name of Maxwell Cohen. Maxwell Cohen was paid by the government to do a report on hate speech, hate propaganda, in 1965, and he hired a Kaufman, a psychologist, to do up a faulty report about how hate speech causes harm to people. And then by 1970, the Cohen Report basically became law, and they passed these hate speech laws. But since then, behavioral psychology has risen, and it's proven that there's no harm. If anything, when you say something that someone feels is hateful, they may get a little upset, but then it makes them want to become part of the conversation. It doesn't harm them, okay? So I had the behavioral neuropsychologist report, all of that, and I'm going to say a whole bunch of stuff here because I've been studying for the last 2-3 weeks. I think I know more than a lawyer now. There's something called the Federal Interpretations Act in Canada, which has a clause that says the law is always speaking. And what the law is always speaking means is that you have to update the law based on that in modern times. So the judge, using the principle of the law is always speaking, tried to say that, oh, nowadays, you know, this is hate speech, okay? Mm-hmm. But that's not what the interpretation is of the law is always speaking. He could say, now we have the internet, and therefore blah, blah, blah. But he cannot lower the threshold of criminality. And that's the key. And that's the argument I was going to make. However, he has to use the law is always speaking with my behavioral neuropsychologist report to say we have fresh evidence that this law is bullshit. So I, again, had that in there. I was going to discuss my common law rights. There's also something called the rules of natural justice, where the judge has to clearly explain why I'm guilty. He didn't do that. He listed off all of the offensive paragraphs in Your War News. But my argument is, under the rules of natural justice, he has to take each paragraph, say, this is why this paragraph is offensive. This is why the exculpatory statements within the same article don't apply. This is why it isn't satire, this, and so on and so on and so on. There's no detailed analysis there. So my lawyer, of course, didn't do any of this because they're lawyers. Right? They're not James Sears, sorry. So I did a lot of research. And I give this to my lawyer. I should, because just going to think you're nuts, right? It's like, and that's the problem. Lawyers don't think out of the box anymore. Okay, that's the problem. My lawyer dealt in good faith, and he did what the system has taught him to do. Right? I now have realized the system's fucked. And I don't care what the system says. We have to now establish our own system. And what we need to do, I think, is we need to set up education for lawyers. We need to take young lawyers out of school, fresh out, find alt-right guys or guys that have this sort of, you know, they just, it's funny, the shit disturbers used to be the hippies with the long hair or whatever. Nowadays, if you're a Nazi, you're a shit disturber. Like, it's considered cool to be, when I say Nazi, that's the term they use on us. I'm just using it more in the slur sense, right? But if you're far right now you're the cool guy. And take a few of these young lawyers who have maybe far right ideals and educate them. Give them props on how to go into a court and harness the common law, the rules of natural justice, all of that. But in any event, to sum up, because I'm not the main speaker today, I go back to court May 31st. It's 9:30 a.m. That's when I'm in court, May 31st, 9:30 a.m. And if the judge decides he's going to haul me off, if the judge decides that he's going to haul me off, then what I'm going to do, my lawyer will be prepared, because technically he's a good lawyer, technically, like he knows the technical aspects, they'll be prepared with the appeal. So he'll run over to University Avenue to the court, the Superior Court, he will file the appeal, and he will file for bail pending appeal, and then come back within a few hours, he'll be out, right? Now, the judge could say, you have to report to the jail on this day, then it's not a big deal, right? But if he wants to be a real bastard, he'll have me let out in cuffs right there. That's usually what they do, to set an example. And I'll thank him. And I'll say, you have no idea how much you're helping me by doing this, or something like that. Like, I'll make sure he realizes. If he leads me out in cuffs that day after what he heard me say, then he's compromised. Okay? Totally. Like, 100%. I'm not saying that. I'm not suggesting that right now. He's listened intently. I think he truly believes in his mind it's hate speech. I think he's just one of those guys from another planet. Like, you know what I mean? Like, who on his planet, this is hate speech. Okay? Got it. Okay? Cool. But after hearing what I said, if he still nails me, then we got a serious problem. Then I know he's compromised. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to make sure everyone knows that he's compromised. Okay? So that's it. Now, any quick... What's that?
I hope he realizes that.
I think he does. Now, any quick questions? And then we'll get to the main act. Yeah, go ahead.
I noticed that they also begin to, if you have that jail sentence of 3 years of not being able to write, now suppose if you go in and get out pending an appeal, will you be able to write? Or
we would appeal. Okay, that's a good question. The Crown was asking for 3 years probation, where we can't publish Year War News or anything similar, and where we can't make disparaging comments about Jews or women. I literally cannot be out and about And like in a coffee shop, and literally open the newspaper, see a picture of Hillary Clinton, and say, dumb cunt. I would go to jail. like it's outrageous. That's what I'm saying. I don't think the judge is going to do that, because the judge kind of looked like, he had a weird look on his face when the Crown suggested that. And my lawyer said, gave the example, saying, what if he says Meryl Streep is a bad actress? I'm like, seriously. So, yeah, of course. The pending appeal would have...
That's sort of too bad.
It's almost a good thing. It would almost be a good thing if the judge that gives me bail pending appeal says, no, I think it's better you not say anything disparaging about Jews and women, because it would just, like, look so bad. Could you freaking imagine that? Someone says, well, you can't say anything disparaging about Jews. I would literally come up and say, God, I love women. I love Jews. You know, I just love them all. I love you. I would go to a female reporter and say, can I kiss you? I love you so much. I love all of you, right? And then I would do it sarcastically. I would just go around and do it sarcastically all day long. I would say I love people. I love them all, right? So I can play that too. Like they're in a lose-lose situation. If they hit me hard, they lose. If they hit me soft, they lose. If they hit me in between, I'm going to peel it, and eventually they're going to lose. So one way or the other, these guys lose, right? Okay. So you know what? We'll leave it at that. I guess. Yeah. I was going to announce he's here, but all right, we'll let Paul do it. We'll let Paul do it.
That was Dr. James Sears, and that was from our meeting on Saturday. And gonna take my musical break right now, and going to play a this is not the song I want. Gonna play a song here by Pam Tillis. Don't tell me what to do. This is Lacey J. Dalton.
There have been times in my life when I felt out of touch and half crazy. Lost in a crowd with lovers and friends by my side. There's a numbness I've known all alone in some shimmering city, with bright lights around me, nothing but shadows inside. There There have been desperate times when my heart was so dry that I felt like my life was a curse. I was standing knee-deep in the river and dying in a thirst. There are months at a time when no reason or rhyme can sustain me. When nothing makes sense and everything turns upside down. There are nights when I fight to keep dreaming from driving me crazy. And I shut off my mind just to keep it from spinning around. And it's down in that quiet, in that stillness I find the sweet waters for which I long search. While standing knee-deep in the river and dying in a thirst. So if you're having times when you feel out of touch and half crazy, lost in a crowd, lovers and friends by your side. If the game's getting old and you're cold and exhausted, maybe you just like to cut back and crumble or lay down and die. If you come to a time when you need to decide, friend, you might want to ask yourself first. Am I standing knee-deep in the river and dying of thirst? There's a great river runs from the heart of the sun to the soul of the whole universe. From the limitless light that brings order and might to the substance of heaven and earth. And it's down in that quiet, in that stillness inside, there's a well we don't see till we hurt. Standing knee-deep in the river, dying thirst. Yes, down in that quiet, in that stillness inside, are sweet waters to heal this world that is standing knee-deep in the river. Standing knee-deep in the river. I'll stand the knee deep in the river and die
first. I've always thought that was a very religious song. That's Lacey J. Dalton. Standing knee-deep in the river and dying of thirst. Well, this is Paul Fromm here on the Fighting Side of Me, going to do another song by Lacey J. This is My Old Yellow Car. When she wrote some reflections about, I don't think this is the one I want, but we'll give it a try. This is My Old Yellow Car, Lacey J. Dalton, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
The Mini Countryman offers that mini experience in our most rugged and adventurous package yet, and with standard all-four all-wheel drive, and
I don't think we really need the ad, and this is now Lacey J. Dalton, and My Old Yellow Car, and...
Mm.
passenger side. The floorboards patched up with paper and tar. But I really want something in my old yellow car. An American girl with her hands on the wheel of a dream that's made of American steel. Oh, the seats had the smell of a nickel cigar. I really want something in my old yellow car.
Play another one by Lazy J. This is my last one for the night, and this is Black Coffee, Lazy J. Dalton. Well, I think it is Black Coffee. Perhaps not. We seem to have a bit of a hiatus here. And, okay, this is, we'll try another one. Working Class Man, Lazy J. Dalton. Here we go. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Lazy J. Dalton, and, Working Class Man.
Working hard to make a living, bringing shelter from the rain. My father's son left to carry on, blue denim in his veins. Oh, he's a working class man. Well, he's a steel town disciple, he's a legend of his time. He's running like a cyclone across the wild blue western sky. A heart of gold.
Lacey J. Dalton, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem, The Real Canada, The Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm.
In days of yore, from Britain's
in the shore,
there was the hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here made to wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.